T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Said, man, they're going to have too many good receivers. You know, I was expecting Hurd and obviously Debo and, Trent Taylor's development, and they drafted Ayuk, and I'm like, wow, they're going to, you know, there won't be enough balls to go around. So, he can make a big difference, I think, if he's right. And I think they're going to have to spread it around, and, you know, we'll see if Kittle is okay. The Cardinals essentially, you know, yes, he was banged up, but the Cardinals essentially in the second half, you know, said, we're not letting George Kittle beat us. We will double him every time, and we just don't care. And go ahead and beat us with the Trent Taylors of the world. And that strategy proved to be a winning one. But, if there is no Kittle, or if Kittle isn't right, Jordan Reed looked amazing from what I'm told, you know, in August during all those practices. So that's another guy who could theoretically give them a little bit of a boost.
Mike Silver joining us, talking a little football. Mohamed Sanu, kind of an emergency pickup. Any expectations for him to look good?
I hope so. I mean, I've been a huge Sanu fan his entire career. I love what Kyle did with him, obviously, in Atlanta. And I thought when the Patriots got him last year for a second-round pick, oh, no, they just got another guy who's going to, you know, be open all the time, and it's going to be a great signing for them. Look out, we're going to have to deal with even more of that nonsense, and I say that from a media perspective, so Ray knows what I'm talking about. But, it didn't work there, and they got rid of him. So I'm hoping that it's one of those things where it just wasn't a good fit there, but he's still the player that he was, because if that's true, he could definitely give him a boost. He's a really talented player. By the way, as you know, you guys know this, I think, quietly, he can sling it a little bit too. Look at his career numbers when throwing the ball. It's pretty impressive.
Is there still the notion among people within football that when Bill Belichick cuts a guy, that's an automatic red flag? Or have there been enough examples of him cutting guys who went somewhere else and did well, that maybe that might be sort of an old wives' tale?
I don't think it's ever really been that way, because his talent evaluation has not been A+. He's coached his way out of some things, and I would humbly submit that Tom Brady has played his way out of a lot of their flaws. But, I think someone like Ozzie Newsome, for example, you'd go, well, most of his guys hit, or it's more, you know, more likely that he would hit. And honestly, I think if you get cut by, say, Pete Carroll and John Harbaugh, partly because of your, you know, the way you're behaving, that's more damning. And Exhibit A would be Earl Thomas, right? Who, you know, it's one thing if Earl Thomas, with all he's accomplished, and he didn't have a great year last year, but he did make the Pro Bowl. With all he's accomplished, you would think Earl Thomas would be getting some nibbles. But I think around the league, people are thinking, well, you know, Harbaugh's pretty cool to play for. It's a pretty, you know, player-friendly environment. And Pete's as good as it gets that way. So what's up? But no, I don't think getting cut by Belichick is damning. He essentially was fired up to move on from Tom Brady. We'll see how that works out. So far, week one, you know, Bill 1, Tom 0, but, you know, see what happens in week 2.
We know Richard Sherman's out. He's on IR. Akella Witherspoon's been in and out of practice, wearing the blue shirt today with concussion. Who is next at the other corner position from Emmanuel Mosley if Witherspoon's not available? Does that move Jimmy Ward? I mean, what do they even do at that point?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they've got to make that work. They've got Taywan Williams, who's got some versatility, and then they have that practice squad thing where you can call guys up, two guys up, you know, toward the end, right before the game. So, you know, it's a good question. I trust that Robert Sala will not go in with, you know, without a plan. But, you know, it was looking so promising a few weeks ago when Barrett was healthy and having a really good camp. And then you had Mosley and Barrett kind of battling it out for that spot. And obviously Richard Sherman healthy. So, you know, they are going to have to figure that out. The only caveat would be look at the Jets receiver situation injury wise and tell me who you'd rather be. I think I'd rather be the Niners hurting that corner than the Jets trotting out what they're trotting out at receiver coming off the game they had. But it'll be interesting.
Mike, I'm old enough to remember wearing masks outside to prevent a pandemic. Now it seems to be about air quality. And that brings us to Seattle as the Mariners continue to cancel games.
Hey, that's where I'm going. I'm following the AQI. They send me to the, you know, the highest AQI possible. So, it's supposed to get better. So I'm supposed to get on an airplane Saturday morning, which in and of itself is a stressful situation. But I'm not getting on if that AQI is crazy high.
Well, let's say it doesn't improve. Might Levi Stadium be the closest option if they couldn't just postpone the game to Monday night then?
Yeah, I don't know. I still don't know what was going to happen. I feel like the league is very, very, very hell-bent on playing, and therefore they say, oh, if it's over 200, they'll have to move it. I think they might live a little loose on that because I didn't get the feeling there was a great contingency plan with Levi's last weekend, and yet it wasn't like, oh, it's definitely going to be under 200. Don't worry about it. I mean, it was still like high 100s as the game approached, and that's kind of how it played out. So, maybe there's a contingency plan for this, but I think the plan is, hey, there's a pandemic, and the Bucks boycotted, and somehow we're playing, so are we really going to let a little smoke stop us? Not to be cynical, but I think they're going to play.
No, to be cynical. That's exactly what you were.
I'm being cynical. Not to admit that I'm being cynical, but I admit that I'm being cynical.
Yeah. Tonight's game, on the other hand, will be a hot mess of a different kind, I suspect. Is this Cleveland Browns hierarchy the same hot mess that could turn two losses into a blow it up sort of terror dome, or are these guys more rational than the last folks that ran through?
I'm a huge fan of the general manager, Andrew Berry. And what I would say is that I do think there's an alignment for the first time. So you're not going to get factions or different voices saying, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. I think they'll decide together, and I think they'll agree. But that doesn't mean that what they have is sacred because, you know, and this, of course, all this goes back to ownership, who's allowed this to continually play out like this. But, you know, Baker Mayfield was a John Dorsey pick, and, you know, Odell Beckham, I think, was a John Dorsey trade. So if it's just not working out, which – so far, you would have to say that Baker Mayfield to Odell Beckham is not the connection that many of us thought it would be. And there's value potentially. And, you know, maybe the head coach isn't as fired up. But, you know, Kevin Stefanski and Case Keenum had some nice success together in 2017. So I don't know. I mean, I think that I think this regime is less likely to just blow it up, flame out, and get replaced. But I also don't think there's anything sacred there, and that it's a fair concern because the cycle perpetuates. You know, Ray, it kind of reminds me of the Warriors all those years where you kept thinking, like, okay, well, now they got this you know, now it's Mike Montgomery, now it's whoever, you know, there's this new person and there's a new strategy and now they're going to do this. And until it actually worked and they, you know, and Steph's ankle wasn't an issue and then Draymond Green turned out to be awesome and Clay turned out to be awesome and they had, you realize they had people who knew what they were doing in there. You always thought that whatever they were going to do was stupid and they were going to have to reboot on the fly.
So the Cleveland Browns need Steph Curry. That's where we are.
No, they need Ike Diagu. Ike Diagu is the answer. I'm sure of it. I'm just positive. Before we let you go, Mike, it's come to my attention. We have not fulfilled our Jimmy Garoppolo question quota. So what's a reasonable drop? Bounce back game? I think we can all agree game one was not good for him. What makes you feel like things are okay in game two?
I just think, like I said, I'm calling week one the preseason opener, and I know that applies to all teams, and some teams handled it better than others, and some teams were more challenged than others, but I'm giving everyone a mulligan, including Tom Brady. So, I know that I've said teams with continuity were way better positioned, and obviously Jimmy and the 49ers were in that group, but if he has an off week in week two, then I'm going to think, well, maybe it's these injuries or maybe there's something there. But I think everybody can just, write off week one as, there really was no off season. There was no preseason. It's just kind of weird. No crowd noise. I just think we'll learn a lot more this Sunday than we did last Sunday.
Mike, let's wrap up with this. How was your week one? You're one of the few guys who actually went into an NFL stadium to cover a game. What was that experience like for you? You've been doing it for the better part of 2-3 decades now, but never like that before.
Yeah, super, super weird, super surreal, not particularly fruitful from a access standpoint, which I'm not saying that to complain. I guarantee, or I get that we're dealing with challenges and all of it's hard, but I was able to write about something that I thought was pretty cool, which was the Larry Fitzgerald hustle play at the end of the first half to sprint, get the ball from DeAndre Hopkins, get it spotted, and allow them to kick a 56-yard field goal at the buzzer to tie the game. And having covered Larry for 17 years, I'm not usually surprised by the great things he does, and I'm always looking for an excuse to write about him. And, I was able to get into a text exchange with him, pulled over on the road after the game, and I talked to another player by phone. And to me, the thing I'll always remember is how unenthused Larry was about me writing that story. He basically was like, dude, I'm a wideout. Like, I really don't want clock management to be, my calling card. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not, a real concern. But, he thought he was just doing his job to do that play, and I thought it was pretty extraordinary.
Hey, Vic Fangio doesn't want clock management to be his calling card either. Thank you very much, Mike. It was great to talk with you.
Thanks. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Mike Silver, NFL Network. The play that he was talking about there, guys, that Larry Fitzgerald play was heads up. It's as big of a play as the Cardinals had all afternoon. Sometimes the biggest play you make is spotting a dead ball. He really, really, really helped his team score points in that moment. Larry can not like the compliments all he wants, but it was part and parcel of them winning that football game. There's no doubt about it.
And it speaks to the type of player he is. He is smart.
Alert.
He
Alert.
Is aware. He knows the situation at all moments, and he knows what football teams have to do to win. It's a classic, savvy veteran move, and it's no surprise that he pulled it off.
Yeah, the thing that struck me was I saw him do it, and it wasn't surprising to me because it was him.
Right.
It's the sort of thing where you take notice of it because – again, there are not that many coaches who have clock management down, so it takes an extraordinary player to have it, at least to that level. But because it was him, I went, oh, yeah, of course he would do that. Yeah, I mean, if Christian Kirk had done it, it would have been eye-popping. Because it was Fitzgerald, it was, at least to my eyes, no big deal at all, and maybe I'm just jaded.
Let's say it had been Antonio Brown, right? Maybe that's the wrong example, but I mean, it felt like it was almost cheating. Like, come on. like the progression of the referee respotting the ball, that should be what is ingrained into the time in between plays. Like, there was a part of me that thought, that shouldn't be allowed. That shouldn't be allowed. Larry Fitzgerald basically spotted the football himself.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he gets the big money and other guys don't. And if it was Antonio Brown, I would be interested for a much different reason.
Right. You know what, though? You see guys kind of deliberately slap the football around to delay in scenarios like that, you know? Or, I accidentally bumped it with my foot. Sorry. Like, am I still lying on you after the tackle? My bad. I didn't see you there. Like, I think that's as fair game as any of those tactics, right? It's just the smart offensive side.
I've seen centers called for delay a game because they rocked the football off the line of scrimmage. It's happened. So
that's true.
An NFL championship was decided by a guy laying on another guy for about 10 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you talking about the Titans game?
It's the Chuck Bednarik game in 1960 when he tackled Frank Gifford and essentially lied on him for at least 10 seconds. The clock ran out and the Eagles won.
That wasn't the famous, and then he got up and he did the punch over Frank Gifford, like iconic.
No, that was a different game.
Okay. Chuck Bednarik just kicked his ass all over the place then, poor Frank Gifford.
You know what? I misspoke. It was against the Packers because it was the NFC. It was the NFL championship, and they wouldn't have played the Giants. So I lied. It was against the Packers.
Shame on you.
I'm scum. I should be fired for the rest of the day.
I love how you only extend it to the rest of the show, and you'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Well, we tend to try to take a broader view.
Yeah, it's a savvy termination, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's very Fitzgeraldian.
Clock management by you. That's Ray's version of clock management, is leaving halfway through the show.
I'm waiting to hear when either you guys don't think that's a good idea.
No, we want you here. We want you here no later than 5:54, Ray. 5:54 is all we ask out of you every day. Thank you.
I hate both of you.
888-957-9570 is the number. We want to officially open this up to the audience. We're coming back, and we're taking your calls until our next guest, which is going to be George Kontos, coming up around 5 o'clock today. We're going to talk a little baseball with him. Giants playing right now. 1-1 last night. A's. Day off for the Oakland A's, and the Bay Bridge Series starts at the Coliseum tomorrow. So a very interesting weekend of baseball. We got NBA playoffs tonight. We got NHL playoffs tonight. Round one of the U.S. Open was played today to very little fanfare, but indeed that happened. So we're going to have a major playoff games in both hockey and basketball, a Bay Bridge Series, and week two of the NFL, which gets underway tonight with a little Bengals-Browns Thursday night football on the 100-year anniversary of the league being formed in Canton, Ohio, in the back of a car dealership. It happened September 17th, 1920, 100 years ago, today, Junior. So there it is. We got some really good stuff coming up in the rest of today's show, but I do want to open it up to the lines and to the audience, because we heard from Bob Wischusen, who is the play-by-play voice of the New York Jets. And when we said, hey, Bob, tell us what you like about your team, he basically said, nothing. Not right now, anyways. not right now. If Kyle Shanahan is just watching week one footage, he's coming out here with a cigar and his feet up. Like, they were bad in Buffalo. So go back to last year. If this is supposed to be an easy win, even as the Niners are going in there licking wounds for their wide receivers and their cornerbacks, what do you want to see as a fan? What would put your mind at ease after a week one loss to Arizona? What are you looking for coming out of this game in New York? If the win is to be assumed, what is a good indicator along the way that the Niners are not turning the corner, but back on track, or as on track as they can be, given their injuries as they exist right now? It's already been a rough year in just 1 week for the 49ers on the injury front.
Yeah, another way to think about it for me is obviously, if the Niners lose this game, we know it's not going to be the year we were expecting, right? But presumably, you had a level of expectation coming into the season, and I'm guessing that if you were to judge the Niners based exclusively on week one, you'd have to lower those expectations. So what can they do against the Jets to not just get the win, but convince you that your initial expectations were the correct ones?
I got an idea. I got two ideas. There's two things that immediately jumped out to mind, and I guess you could say they're really not two things because one is an indicator of the other. But I'll keep that in my bag. We want people to get into their bag and tell us what you think. What is going to alleviate some concerns? If a win is to be assumed, what's the style point you're looking to see in New York from the San Francisco Giants? And we'll worry about, or excuse me, did I say the Giants? I meant the Niners. It'll be the New York Giants next week. The San Francisco Giants are trying to play baseball right now. They're going to be playing against the A's this weekend. These are good times, man. They really are. September is just chock full of so much happening. And, oh, by the way, Big Ten is going to be playing football. Won't be long until the Pac-12 follows suit. How the state of California goes, changing its mind about things with so much money to be lost. There's so many people who have been exposed in this. There really has been. And, there will now not be the control group that I really hoped would exist in the world of college football. Knowing that everybody else is going to go play, go ahead and play, and let's see 10 years from now, what's the difference between the guys who played and the guys who didn't. That's a little morbid, but I was sort of interested in that. I don't think we're going to get it because there is a rush to the field, because there's going to be a rush to the cash register. Maybe not even fans showing up in person, but I can only think that if you're going to be playing football in a year where you already promised everybody, we're not playing football and we're not going to change our mind about that, how long will it take before you start changing your mind about the amount of fans let in, where they can congregate, who can come in? Again, Georgia today saying no tailgating, but you will be allowed to gather in the parking lot. That's just I got to figure out an analogy that best tries to, what the hell is that? That is unbelievable.
How about this? If that really is like basically saying you can't grill here, haven't you made it less safe? Because aren't there going to be like less people in this? Isn't there more space with the grills? Isn't a grill a thing that's not a person to be between people? Like, how does this help? What is a gathering in the parking lot if not a tailgate?
I mean, if there's a cooler of beer for people to stand around, that's a tailgate,
right?
But it's the same logic that the governor of Texas applied when he said, we have a record number of people who have gotten COVID and are feeling better now. He said that today.
We have a record number of people who've been hit in the face with a shaving cream pie who don't need to buy shaving cream this year.
George Orwell underplayed his hand by a lot.
Seriously. Dystopia. It should be the brand new, like, Disney presents your animated, like, forget Zootopia, it's Dystopia. It really is nuts, man. You're watching the ESPN bottom line ticker, and all of a sudden it's like, well, this entire football team had to cancel its game, and now this Team X is looking for a new Team Y to come out and play on September 26th because this game just got canceled because they can't put an offensive line out on the field in a healthy fashion. I mean, it really is. It is Orwellian what is going on these days. We'll be back in just a second. Again, we're opening it up to you. Let's hear from you. Niners fans, what do you need to see in New York that will put your mind at rest? I got two things that are front and center of what I want to see. What do you want to see? 888-957-9570. We're coming back. We're taking your calls. We're going to talk to George Kontos at 5 o'clock. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by AAA Northern California, Nevada, and Utah.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Good days, good times. I mean, there is so much sports in the air, which is really good because there's only been pestilence and smoke in the air, really defining the last 5 months. So sports in the air is a really nice change of pace. Welcome back. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on the air this afternoon here on 95.7 The Game. We asked you, the good caller, what did you want to see, assuming a trip to New York to play the Jets is a win? Beyond a win, what would make you feel better about this season for the 49ers? It didn't get off to the start anyone wanted to see. All of a sudden, you look around the depth chart. There are deficiencies at wide receiver and cornerback, which are enough to give any team a headache. So knowing all of that and still expecting a win in New York, what do you want to see that would reassure you that the 49ers were getting it back on track in a season where they're supposed to return to the Super Bowl? Matador Mike in San Jose. Hello, Matador.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call. First off, I just think we need to win in convincing fashion this week. I just want to see, starting off on first and second down, getting good yards, because that was one of our keys last year in converting on third down, just getting more manageable third down conversion situations. Defense, just get a lot more three and outs and just be consistent in a lot of little things. I don't think we need to win in style points this year, this game right here, to have Garoppolo put over 400 yards. I don't need to see that. I just need to see us run and dominate the ball, make some ding-dong passes around here and there, just dominate. I don't care if they just get garbage time points at the end of the game. As long as they're winning by 20 points, I can care less. Just win in dominant fashion.
Matador Mike, thank you very much. A little dominance out there. Sure. I mean, yeah, I'll take as much dominance as you can give me in any football game. You know, but he was talking about schedule and staying on schedule. Not only were the 49ers the best team on third down in the NFL last year, they were the best team on first down. And that really did not take shape against Arizona. I'm surprised to see how much they struggled against that Arizona defense, which I guess is improving for the first time in a long time. I knew that they were going to struggle a little against a brand-new-look offense with a coach who thinks something of his own ability to run guys open, with a guy who absolutely runs open, with a quarterback who is a headache waiting for anyone who plays against him. He's so stylistically different than just about everyone else you see in the league. But, man, guys, what do you think?
Well, the first thing I think about when you said what you just said is that people who don't live in the area and people who look at the league came away agreeing that Garoppolo wasn't very good, but that Arizona is very for real, not just kind of for real. They came away far more impressed with the Cardinals than they were sort of depressed by the 49ers. So that might be how you have to look at this. In terms of Sunday, you know, I mean, what if they win 31-27 and Garoppolo looks good, but the defense isn't great? I mean, it's so hard to tell who these guys are, given what their depth chart looks like today, that it's sort of, you know, I have a feeling that every game is going to look different than the one before it. And we won't really get that sense of, hey, they're this, you know, at least until through the Philly game, and maybe until New England. I mean, I've said New England all along, but in shorter terms, I think maybe Philly is the first real litmus test to tell if they are deficient or they just vomited on themselves on Sunday.
Just to follow up with what you said there, Ray, is the Philadelphia game a game that you actually had circled before the year starts? Or are you looking at their week one result with Cam Newton and putting maybe a little bit more onus on them still looking like and performing like New England, and now they're back on your radar as a team to worry about?
Well, New England was always there because I don't think Bill Belichick is in a position where he's going to coach a bad team. I brought up Philadelphia only because that's the first game they have against a team that at least won a division last year, even if it was 9-7, and even if they didn't look great. It's more of a test than either New York team. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of a signpost on the way to the signpost, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay.
But up until then, I thought they should handle Philadelphia. But, you know, if they're not, you know, if if every week is a, gee, let's see what the injury report says, then I think games against teams who are by rights, you know, in and around 500, those become big deals too. And they probably, if they were healthy, wouldn't be that.
Look, the injury situation changes everything. There's no question about that. This Niners injury situation has reached a point where, honestly, you want to know how each week's going to go. The first place you look is the injury report, right? We want to see what kind of options Jimmy Garoppolo has this week. The first place we're going to look tomorrow is the injury report. We want to see, is the pass rush going to be fully healthy? First place we're looking is the injury report, because now Dee Ford's on it too. That's obviously a huge issue here. But I do think if you are who you think you are as the Niners, which is a championship contender, then even with that injury report, this is not a game we'd like to win. It's a game we should win. You should beat the Jets, who are also a little beat up, even if you're this injured. And, you know, that's why for me the bigger question is, what are you looking for within that victory to indicate to you that there is more here than just a team that can hold on throughout the season and potentially scratch their way into the playoffs, right? Because I think that would be a disappointing season for the Niners. I mean, unless you've totally changed where you stand after week one, I think most people still believe this is not a team that should be, you know, scratching and clawing to a 7 seed in the new playoff format to lose in the first round. This is a team that still has designs on winning a title. And so you have to show me something that indicates those expectations are still reasonable.
Yeah, this is not an on-the-margins football team. And if it is, it's a huge disappointment. Now, right. You could say history says you will be an on-the-margins team. And, you know, if you choose not to respect history, you might trip over it on your way to disrespecting it. And let's not hope that that takes place this year for the Niners, because that would throw everything out of whack. We know that week one was a little out of whack. We know week two is set up to be maybe a little out of whack. Assuming they win, outside of the result of a W, what do you need to see from an individual player, a position group, that will put your mind at ease, 49ers fans? 888-957-9570. Kurt in Napa. Hello, Kurt.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So biggest thing for me is I need the defense to just play better. I mean, being one of the top defenses last year, last week was just sort of a joke to me. I expect that they're going to come out with a bit of a chip on their shoulder next week, or I guess this weekend, at least 2 or 3 sacks. I'm hoping for 1 defensive touchdown. Wouldn't be surprised if there's 2. I think they saw what happened last week, and they're going to come out and win this big. That's my hope.
I hope you're right. I really am, because I just don't like doing worry about your season football from week one on. That's no fun. It's a lot more fun to be a good football team looking to take down, you know, average to bad football teams when that is in front of you. We know that that's what's in front of you with the New York Jets. What I want to see, dominance on one place, line of scrimmage. That's it. I don't know what's going to be happening at wideout. I don't know what's going to be happening at cornerback. I see how this game could get ugly at times on the outside, and a big play popping here or there is bound to happen. It can't happen in between the tackles. You got to dominate the line of scrimmage. You got to keep Frank Gore in the category of old man, not great comeback story. And I hate saying that about Frank, but when you're not wearing the same uniform, you're the enemy. That's how this works now. Dominating the line of scrimmage. Nick Bosa throwing Mekhi Becton around a little bit. And Bosa and the others. Bosa's got to go off, meaning the others go off. or Bosa's got to have enough of a double-teaming, demanding presence to where the other guys go off. The whole thing needs to start working. Matt, you've been on it. D. Ford, where are you? Eric Armstead, where are you? Solomon Thomas, I don't know if you're even going to be on the team if you don't show up and do something soon. That's the way it's going for you. It has to happen. You got to look good against a C-minus New York Jets offensive line. And your defense, or your offensive line. And we will hear from Trent Williams here in just a little bit. You got to get that push. You got to be the team that ran for 150 yards against the New York Jets. Why not?
Yeah, the Jets present, and I feel differently after listening to, you know, their play-by-play guy. I mean, he all but said, the team I look at every week stinks on ice. And so that's why I'm sort of the opinion that it almost, there isn't a litmus test to have here unless they actually lose. I mean, if they win and they're not dominant, but they don't get anybody else hurt, they've done okay. If they win and they are dominant, that's fine. But if they win and they just don't increase their injury list, I think they'll be okay with that. And I think that's probably the right way to look at this. I don't need dominance over the Jets, given what they're at like now. In a couple of weeks when they're healthier, then you can change the metric. But this is the metric they've got this week.
Maybe, but I think there's a subtler way of looking at that. Because, I mean, what you just said, Ray, is there's no litmus test to be had here unless they lose. And, I mean, part of that is because they really can't afford a loss here based on their schedule. But part of that, I'm sure, also is that you're saying that a loss to a Jets team in this much disarray would be a test result of bad, that it would suggest that this team has real problems. And I think we can take a more micro view of the same concept. We can zoom in farther with the same idea and say, if the Niners' defensive line can't win against the Jets' offensive line in convincing fashion. Now, look, does that mean they have to win by 20? No. But if I can't see something out of D. Ford and Eric Armstead against the Jets, that's, to me, a very bad omen for what I might see out of them against what is likely to be potentially a better offensive line every single remaining week of the year.
Yeah.
I mean,
you don't look good on the line of scrimmage this week. Your defense has more problems than Richard Sherman has a calf strain.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what so I do kind of think there's a litmus test of how it looks. And I don't want to call it style points, because it's not about style points. It's about if you can't show what you're capable of in this scenario, when can you do it? I'm not sure it's fair for me to believe that you can if you can't do it against the Jets.
You know what's really weird? Watching the bottom of the ninth inning at 24 Willie Mays Plaza, and it's the Mariners hitting. That's what had just happened, though.
Sure is weird.
It is weird. It's weird. I'm looking at it. I'm like, top of the ninth. How come this game isn't over yet? What is going on here? Bottom of the ninth. Wait a minute. The Giants are – the Mariners were the home team today, and the Giants have won. That's two in a row. They beat the Mariners last night. Very comfortable visiting their own yard, if you will. 15 hits and 9 runs last night. A 9-3 win over Seattle. Home runs from both Brandons and Evan Longoria. Drew Smyly, he struck out 8 and 3 2/3. I don't know why he wasn't asked to do more, but after about 80 pitches, he was pulled from that game. Drew Smyly, with a prolific night of strikeouts in a very short amount of time, gets yanked out of there before he can even take a decision. Mariners had 17 strikeouts last night, and today the Giants have just beaten them 6-4. So a couple of wins against Seattle for the San Francisco Giants they had today.
And the Mariners struck out 12 more times.
The bigger story to me is this Giants team came back from multiple runs down again.
This
is a Giants team unlike one we've seen in like a decade, basically.
The way they are capable of coming back in late innings makes them an incredibly exciting team to watch.
4-1 opposition in the first three innings was bad news for the Giants for years. When they were winning World Series, that was bad news. They scored 2 in the 6th, 3 in the 7th, and win 6-4 today. 9 hits. They even had an error that didn't hurt them. Oh, did Mike Yastrzemski leave this game, though, injured?
I don't know how bad the injury is, but he did not.
He sort of
got in at bat.
He kind of came up like he might have strained something in the lower regions in the outfield. And calf is what I'm hearing from the studio. So we don't know how bad it is at all, but some sort of muscle issue in the lower leg, which is not great.
Well, here's what I know about Mike Yastrzemski for a song compared to what the guys above him on this list are making. He has given you as much value as you're going to find anywhere in baseball right now. Mike Yastrzemski, going into today's game, had a National League WAR of 2.3, putting him 6th behind Freddie Freeman, Fernando Tatis Jr., Mookie Betts, Manny Machado, and Trey Turner. Then there's Mike Yastrzemski with Trevor Story and Michael Conforto right under him. The guy is a huge part of what the Giants are doing, and if there were something to happen to him, as excited as I am about this lineup, you take Yastrzemski out of it, everyone is automatically out of place. You know, that would not be good. You don't want to see that getting extended for any long amount of time. Mike Yastrzemski is a huge part of what the San Francisco Giants are doing this year, and they continue to surprise everybody all year. And now it's the Oakland A's. I mean, no rest for the weary. They got a Bay Bridge series that is officially starting tomorrow. Trevor Cahill against Chris Bassett tomorrow night at the Coliseum. Johnny Cueto against Frank Montas with a 1-10 start on Saturday afternoon. Oakland split a two-game series with the Mariners in that terrible error doubleheader that they were forced to play through. Then they split a two-game series with the Rockies, so they actually even helped the Giants out a teeny tiny bit. And now we get Bay Bridge Series 2 Electric Boogaloo. Let's do it.
Yeah, this is going to be fun down the stretch because there literally are six teams they have to look at every day. They're not going to be anything other than a wild card team. But the other two divisions are such hot messes that they could end up playing either the Cubs or Atlanta. But they have to fight off Miami, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Colorado, and if you want to stretch it, the Mets. So basically every game in the National League over the next 10 days matters to them.
This season, this format, I never want to do it again, but it sure is interesting.
Yeah, the American League is a lot less interesting because you already know who's in. Because the ninth place team is Seattle, and they're, maybe they put pressure on Houston and finish second in the division, but that's unlikely. And they're not going to be a wild
card.
Okay, but
on the other hand,
you pretty
Ray,
much know who you got. In the National League, you're getting all
the
chaos
other hand,
you can eat, which is good.
Yeah, but in the AL, tell me who's the best team in the league.
You know you want me to say it. I'm making you say it. You say the words.
No, that's not even what I'm doing. I'm saying there isn't one. Like the White Sox, I think, have the best record right now. I believe they finished off a win today to clinch a playoff spot. But it's a mess. I love my team. I'm not convinced they're the best team. Who is it? I don't know. Cleveland is good. It seems like they might sometimes be good. Minnesota might sometimes be good. Tampa Bay, It is a confusing, even though we know the eight, it's a mess once you get into the playoffs in the AL.
I mean, if the Yankees are the 8 or 7 seed, that's pretty scary, is it not?
Well, no, they're the 5 now. They've passed Toronto, and they are winning all the time, and they have all their guys healthy again, except for Gleyber Torres.
All right, so look out for
they might be the best team.
Unballyhooed New York Yankees. I'll say this about the American League. The only thing that I think I know is that Jose Abreu is the MVP. That guy is just having a monster year. Gosh. He won that MVP in like 4 games at Wrigley. I mean, he was unbelievable in that crosstown series. June Lee of ESPN.com said, I expect the Giants to have the strongest chance to make the second round in the National League, which is nuts because they would be the eighth today against the Dodgers. This team has its share of surprises this year between Mike Yastrzemski and Donovan Solano emerging as key offensive cogs, but the relatively young Giants have a bevy of veterans with postseason experience, including Johnny Cueto, Brandon Crawford, and Evan Longoria, who could help San Francisco pull off a first-round upset of what has already been a chaotic season. Again, that is June Lee from ESPN.com. By the way, the Dodgers have already hit their magic number. They're the first team in baseball to clinch a playoff spot in the postseason. And again, if we started today, Giants-Dodgers right out of the rip. And I would rather see Giants-Dodgers right out of the rip than Giants anywhere else having a better chance to advance. If you're going to do it, do it.
You know, I was with you like a week ago, but the more I watch this team, the more fun I think it would be to watch them in a series. I think they have a chance of winning, and I really do think the Dodgers would be awful tough for them. Almost any other team in the National League, I would give the Giants a pretty decent shot. So all of a sudden, the schadenfreude of scaring the Dodgers is not enough for me. I'd like to see this team sneak into the seven spot and win a round.
Are you talking about the We Believe Giants?
Yes, I am.
Believe Giants!
God, I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. You know what? Do it. Do it. It's 2020. Yeah, you can't you can't surprise me anymore.
I wouldn't like their chances against Atlanta, except for the fact that the Braves' pitching has been decimated by injury. Their two best guys
either.
Have been out for a while, Max Fried and Mike Soroka. And while they hit okay, they're not indomitable if they don't have starting pitching. And the Cubs are sort of, they should have taken care of their division a long time ago, and yet they're still allowing teams like St. Louis and Milwaukee and even Cincinnati, who's in second place now, to just sort of annoy them, and that's not a good sign.
No team in the National League plays down to its competition as often as the Chicago Cubs do. They're dreadful doing that. They really are. Look, the San Francisco Giants, they're playing with house money in a year where no one expected them to do a thing. Go ahead. Get in there. Make noise. Shake up the world. Every win in the postseason should get at least a block of Market Street. You only get to go up Market Street the whole way to City Hall if you win the World Series. But, like, a win or two, yeah, it's a block. You get to make it up to, like, 2nd Street. You know, that'd be nice. It'd be the shortest parade, but, hey, it'd be fun to have one as long as everyone stays 6 feet apart and wears a mask.
2nd Street's, like, about 7 blocks. That's an awful lot of chunk.
Hey, if you're going to take a step around or two, you got to win at least 3.
One block per win.
888-957-9570 is the number. More of your calls coming up next hour, but we're going to kick it off with a guy we love talking baseball with. George Contos is ready to join us. We'll get into a little bit of the bean war that broke out. Started scary last night when Coonrod plunked a player, and today it got a little nasty out on the field. We will go over it all with a man who has been there, done that, George Contos, around the corner here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky, brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.